Good morning and welcome back, readers and romance seekers, to Hopelessly Romantic Behind the Page. So full disclosure, it is currently Wednesday, May 4th, 2022, as I'm sitting down and writing out my script for this episode. I don't really like to date the episodes like this. Maybe the closest I'll get is perhaps mentioning when a novel was published if I think it's relevant. I also don't write out a full script for Behind the Page episodes, usually, since I consider it more of the casual aspect of Hopelessly Romantic. It's really less of a review show and more of an amalgamation of my thoughts and feelings of what I have reviewed. I'll write out bullet points and follow my mind through those spaces as I record. It's not meant to have a formal structure like the main show, and it's certainly not meant to be very serious unless there's something that's genuinely bothering me about the previous week's book. During this past week, I wrestled with the problem of bringing the real world into the show. In the very beginning, I even said as much with our second episode, She Dreamed of a Cowboy, when the novel mentioned the still-ongoing coronavirus pandemic, and somehow managed to hit beats that resonated with my own life. Because as far as I was concerned, we were here for fluffy escapist romance. The real world does not need to come into play. The closest that I'll get to discussing real-world topics is bringing up sexual education. I mean, I review erotic romance novels. Sex is at the top of the list for discussion, and I am a huge advocate for safe and realistic sexual education. Hell, last week we read a novel that surrounded a surprise pregnancy, in which options were discussed, albeit angrily. I cannot build up my podcast on this concept and turn my back on relevant news. And ultimately, I have a platform. A platform on which it would be appropriate to discuss relevant and current events. So for the next few minutes, I'm going to stand on my soapbox and use this platform as best as I can. This past Monday, the near unthinkable had occurred, in which a Supreme Court ruling draft had been made public, weeks before it was supposed to be released. This news alone would be groundbreaking, had it not come with the knowledge that Roe v. Wade was about to be overturned. I'm not going to get political here. This isn't about politics. I'm going to state the facts as best as I understand them. I'm going to be pulling information straight from Wikipedia and Planned Parenthood and presenting it in terms that I hope are accessible to as many people as possible. Roe v. Wade was a landmark decision of the Supreme Court in 1973. Essentially, it protects a woman's freedom to choose to terminate a pregnancy without unreasonable restrictions from the United States government. A woman using the pseudonym of Jane Roe was pregnant and no longer wished to be so. She lived in Texas, where it was illegal to terminate pregnancy unless the woman's life was at risk. Her lawyers filed a lawsuit against her current local district attorney, Henry Wade. Eventually, the case was brought before the Supreme Court, who ruled in Roe's favor 7-2. It was argued that Roe had a reasonable expectation of medical privacy as outlined by the 14th Amendment, allowing her to make her own choices about her body. I'm not a lawyer. The ins and outs are far more complicated, but that's the gist. In 1992, another case was brought before the court, modifying the roles of Roe v. Wade. With Planned Parenthood v. Casey, the court reaffirmed a woman's rights to choose, but changed some of the framework of abortion restrictions based on fetal viability. The thing about abortion is that this is a reality of existence. As long as people have been having babies, there have been methods to end pregnancy. Whether it's because the pregnancy isn't viable or the mother, for whatever reason, cannot be pregnant at the time. The problem arises when the procedure is made illegal and safe alternatives are removed, because the only thing that's left is unsafe alternatives and people will die. So other than writing to our representatives, donating to activist groups, protesting, and showing up for every election possible, what else can be done if you need accesses to resources and healthcare? Planned Parenthood is probably the first place that people think of when they think of women's health. They provide so much more than just abortions. They provide education, cancer screenings, prenatal care, anything that has to do with reproductive health, that's what they're there for. If you have questions about pregnancy or sexual health, they very may well be your one-stop shop. If you are in urgent need of help, there is a forum on Reddit called r/AuntieNetwork. They not only provide resources and information, but they also offer help to women in need, whether it's a place to stay if they have to leave their state for care, or information on medication that may help, or general guidance. And finally, I'll tell you about aidaccess.org. They provide consultation and abortion pills by mail for pregnant individuals who are less than 10 weeks along. They have an extensive FAQ section that will answer a number of questions about the process so that their patients are as well informed as possible. There is a myriad of other resources out there, but again, Planned Parenthood and Auntie Network are more than able to point someone in the right direction. Because at the end of the day, an individual's right to choose what happens to their body is sacred. The big thing about Roe v. Wade was that at its heart, it was about privacy. Medical privacy without government intervention. What happens to a person, medically speaking, should be between them and their doctor. Literally no one else on the planet. Not their employer, not their partner, and certainly not the United States government. The loss of Roe v. Wade has larger implications than I think anyone realizes. I've been seeing a few theories on what would be next after Roe v. Wade is gone, and those are speculations that I am quite uncomfortable considering. Now, I will say that the draft leak from the Supreme Court is only that, a draft, and who knows what will happen when it's officially announced. I won't hold my breath at hoping a justice would change their mind to flip their decision, so we all need to prepare. I will place links to the resources I've mentioned in the show notes, so if you are in need, please, don't be afraid to reach out to those organizations. They are here to help. Life isn't a romance novel. We might have happy endings, but realistically, there are a lot more barriers to cross than just your typical third act separation. And an unexpected pregnancy might be one of those barriers. This is real life. Sometimes pregnancy is not welcome. Sometimes it is even lethal. So thanks for sticking around for my little soapbox rant. The whole situation sucks, but I could not, in good conscience, go silent on this topic, especially considering the subject matter of last week's novel review. I mean, even though the world is burning down, I can still roast some marshmallows on the fire and try to bring some joy and or normalcy into our lives. So, yeah. Last week was Pregnant and Penniless in Paradise. What a choice of a novel, right? I swear to God, I had no idea this was going to go the way it was. But while I'm here, let's consider Kitty's situation from an objective standpoint. Let's imagine for a moment that this was not a romance novel. Kitty is a live-in nanny. She loves her job, but her employers kind of suck. They seem to have a pretentious holier-than-thou judgment thing going on, and they've decided to fire her for a one-night stand. Sure, she was in a tropical paradise. It was her only night off after they'd promised her that she would have more time to herself, and a handsome man practically threw himself at her. It's reasonable to expect that she would go out and have some fun. If they hadn't guessed that she'd had the one-night stand, they'd have likely fired her for being pregnant when they started to see that. It should be noted that Kitty likely could have brought a legal suit against them and won. She was living with the family. It's not like she had an apartment to go home to after getting the sack. I don't know how it is in the UK, but I feel like eviction laws would have come into effect here in the States. If she hadn't had theoretical access to legal assistance via Santiago, she likely wouldn't have been able to afford a suit if she wanted to pursue that. In short, Kitty is vulnerable. She has no job, little money, and now she is pregnant with a kid by a guy halfway across the planet. It's not a stretch to consider that an abortion would have been at the top of the list of options available to Kitty. Really, when I think about it, Santiago would have never known. He would have, you know, gone, oh yeah, I remember that girl, she was really cool, and eventually he'd get over it. He would have never known that she was pregnant, because they did use protection. And I don't think that I mentioned this in the review, the job Santiago offered Kitty was temporary. So she relocated herself to another freaking country with no plan and no long-term options with a baby on the way. So wait, hang on. What did I score realism last week? What was it, a 2? I must have been high, because that should have been a 1 when I spell it out like this. I won't rescind my score, I'll never do that, but this book is on shaky ground. I don't know, for some reason, the more I think about it, the madder I get. Maybe it's just because of the situation with everything right now. This is a sort of Cinderella story with baby shoes, and I kind of hate what it's suggesting here. A baby cannot make a relationship. Babies cannot save relationships, so what makes people think that it's reasonable to consider that two people can get married after 3 weeks of knowing someone just because one of them got knocked up? Yes, I know it does happen, don't come at me, but it's not realistic. They don't call them shotgun weddings because both parties were at the altar willingly. I think that I'm going to go ahead and move on now before I really get myself too worked up. That's enough realism for the moment. Let's look into what Heather's been reading this week. And I've been reading a very interesting book called Cursed Bunny by Bora Chung. This book got onto my radar thanks to my wonderful technical advisor. It arrived at my door one day, and he was quite excited about it. Cursed Bunny is on the 2022 shortlist for the International Booker Prize, having been translated into English from Korean. It's the third Korean novel to do so, with the first two being The Vegetarian and The White Book, both written by Han Kang. I'll know if Cursed Bunny wins at the end of May, so I'm hoping that it goes all the way, because it's very, really good. Bora Chung herself is an amazing woman. She has an MA in Russian and East European Area Studies from freaking Yale, as well as a PhD in Slavic Literature from Indiana University. Currently, she's teaching Russian language and literature and scientific studies at Yonsei University, and translates modern novels from Russian and Polish into Korean. She's also written 6 books. Like, when I call her an overachiever, it comes from a place of both awe and envy. She's incredible. Anyway, Cursed Bunny is a collection of short stories, and I've read the first several of them. I joked to our technical advisor that it reads exactly like a novel that's been nominated for one of the most prestigious literary awards in the world, because, I mean, it was. The stories all have different ideas, but if they have one overall tone, I would say that they read like nightmares. I don't mean like they're nightmare scenarios or they're full of horror. I mean that they seem to follow a dreamlike logic, where it makes sense in the dream or the nightmare, until you wake up and you realize that it shouldn't have made sense at all, even though it still does to a point. The second story in the collection, The Embodiment, embraces this concept the best out of the ones that I've read so far. What's also important to remember is that this is a translated work. I learned a long time ago that translation cannot be an equal word-to-word transformation. It's just not possible. It's not just the words that are spoken, but an entire cultural understanding that needs to be translated. Anton Herr was the translator for Cursed Bunny, and he is an incredible individual himself, and I feel that he did an excellent job on this book. I was asked how I felt about the translation, and I said honestly that I felt like I wasn't missing anything, but I know that there are things that I am missing. One day, I'll have to get my hands on the original Korean text, and once I'm in any way proficient in my Korean language skills, I might see what I can translate for myself. At any rate, I'll tell all of you to go out and read Cursed Bunny. You might have to go looking for it, though. I don't know if it's fully out in the United States yet. The copy that I have came from a publisher in the United Kingdom. And I'm not quite done with all of you yet. I discovered something rather special that I think you all might enjoy if you need a quiet moment of zen. As much as I love Cursed Bunny, it's not something that you read to quiet the mind. So I'll tell you about Unpacking. Unpacking is a video game, and it's exactly what it says on the tin. You unpack things. This was another piece of media offered to me by my technical advisor. He played it for 10 minutes, then promptly sat me down at his computer and handed me the mouse. In the game, we follow a young woman as she goes through her life, but you never see her. You never see the people that she interacts with. You don't hear her. You only know her through the objects that you take out of her moving boxes. I might argue that unpacking could also be show, don't tell the game, because even though I don't see anyone in this game, I know what's happening in her life. She's moving out for college. She gets roommates. She moves in with a boyfriend. She moved back home after the breakup. I'm not told any of these things. I'm shown, through objects and the spaces that they move in, what's happening. There's something peaceful about this game, but I'm still reminded of the deep emotions that come with living. I laughed as I had to fit things into rooms when she moved in with friends. I was frustrated that I couldn't put her diploma on the wall in her boyfriend's apartment, only under the bed. I had a bittersweet smile when I saw that she'd moved into another place on her own, perhaps with her parents. And I felt a sense of familiarity with her. I was nostalgic as I opened her things, the game beginning in the early 2000s. She and I were alike in many ways, similar interests, favorite colors. I imagined that we would be friends if she were real. It's a kind and forgiving game, and if you need a quiet space, I would say give Unpacking a play. All right, so I think that'll be it for me today, everyone, and I hope I didn't leave you too down. Just know that I'm rooting for you no matter what. And I hope to see you again next week for our anniversary special. Thank you for joining me, readers and romance seekers, and I hope to see you once again for Hopelessly Romantic. If you like the show, please visit us at hopelesslyromanticpodcast.com. If you have questions or want to recommend a read, please email us at contact@hopelesslyromanticpodcast.com. Also, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. It will go a long way to help the show, and I can keep bringing you lots of fun episodes. The show is written and produced by me, Heather Songster. Our technical advisor is Kwang Yun Cho. Hopelessly Romantic is an H with K production. And it doesn't matter what you read, only that it's what you love.